Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to another episode of That's What People Do. You are joined by me, Ryan McGowan, and as always, James Kay. How are you doing today, bud?
I'm very well. Thank you, Ryan. No complaints. How are you?
I'm good. This is a bit of an impromptu episode. This is an episode that we did not have planned at all. But recent news has just, you know, it requires it, let's be honest. What's happened, James? Tell us.
The Juice died. He died as well. Funnily enough, if people who are aware of what I do for work, I do like news entertainment writing. I never go in the office. The last time I went in the office was December 17th or something around then. But I went into the office on Thursday, just, you know, to show my face, show them I'm still alive. And that's when the news dropped. And it happened. All of us writers sat at the table. And then I just heard this gasp. And then everyone looked up being like, what's going on? And they're like, OJ's died. And the table just went fucking silent and everyone just locked into their laptop, just started writing.
Were you all writing your own individual articles that were being put out?
So there was like this weird silence where no one knew what to do. And then like Michelle, who called it, was like, I'll write it. And then everyone started like throwing in pictures and like ideas. And like, it was cool. Mm. I got it up on Instagram. Everyone helped out. But yeah, that's how the news was broken. Just a gasp went up in the room.
Mate, that's such OJ died. Look behind the curtain of how online journalism sort of works.
It's just people at a table in an office in Whitechapel, by where one of the Jack the Ripper murders happened. Yeah. So that was fun. And then the comments were weird because when we got it up almost immediately, and I think we'll probably go into it in this episode. Some people were like, good riddance, fuck him. And others were like, this is awful. Condolences to the family. Mm. It was just so polarized. It's fascinating.
Well, interestingly, we'll look at his life and career as we get into it. But the NFL and his former teams that he played for refused to comment at all on his death. But one of the organizations that gave him a trophy in his early career, the Heisman Group people, they were like, they put out a post on Twitter saying like, oh, condolences to, you know, the family and all this kind of stuff. And everyone on that was like, oh my God, how fucking dare you, this, that, the other. And they're just being like, okay, yeah, I hear you, but like, you know, a great star, like a great sportsman is dead and we're honouring that. And it's like, can you differentiate? And we'll look at what he gets up to in his life as we go on.
I mean, whenever I think about OJ Simpson, Oscar Pistorius comes to mind straight away because it just feels very similar.
Yeah.
And would I offer condolences? Would the Paralympics or Olympics, whatever, offer condolences to Oscar Pistorius? I doubt it.
But might they in you know, 20 years time after the fact.
Maybe. Maybe. We just don't know.
Yeah.
But then he was found guilty, wasn't he? So that was, well, was he? I don't know. Maybe we need to do an episode on Oscar Pistorius.
I think he was. I think he was found guilty. If of anything, manslaughter, but don't quote us on that.
Because he was scared and just shot through a bathroom door. Fucking idiot.
It's South African and they all have guns and apparently it's very scary.
It sounds it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
OJ is a divisive figure. Lots of people back him, lots of people hate him. But let's sort of get into maybe why and find out a little bit more about him. So, yes, let's do it. Orenthal James Simpson. Orenthal is a good name. I've never heard that word before. Orenthal James Simpson was born July 9th, 1947, to Eunice Simpson, who was a hospital administrator, and a man called Jimmy Lee Simpson, who, interestingly enough, was a well-known local drag queen in the San Francisco area. Which is quite interesting, because this is 1947.
Yeah, imagine they got some hate comments.
Probably, because one, he's black, so I imagine that wasn't too easy. But also, he's a drag queen. And actually, later in life, comes out gay. Supposedly, so I've heard, in 1986, he died of AIDS. Interesting dad, which probably could do an episode on our own. He seems interesting dude. Anyway, OJ's parents split up in 1952, meaning that OJ grew up in a one-parent family. Now, he's born with rickets, which is a condition where not enough nutrients are getting into the body. It's more like a thing that poorer people tend to have. You've got poor nutrition and diet. It causes soft bones, which can make them bend and eventually set funny. So for OJ, his legs were bowed and he had to wear leg braces till he was 5. It meant that he could walk, but it gave him an unnaturally wide gait when walking, which he was ended up being quite famous for. Now, growing up black in 1950s America was a challenge to be sure, but it might have been just a little bit easier in San Francisco, only because California was too busy being racist to Chinese and Japanese people. They probably just didn't have the energy to be fully racist to black people, although they did give it a good go. Are you aware of California's issue with Asian people in the early, 1900s?
No, not at all.
Bro, it's probably on par, as a white man commenting, probably on par with the racism that black people got in America. California fucking hated Chinese, Japanese people.
Why specifically California?
Mainly Chinese people, and it's because obviously on the other side of the Pacific is Japan and China and Asia.
Yeah.
And a lot of them were coming over to California to work, and that was where that was their first port of contact when they reached the Americas was California. So there's there's a lot of people in California of Asian descent. They were like, nah, not having none of these immigrants coming over here, none of these Chinese and Japanese people coming over. Obviously, in the 1940s, during the Second World War, there was basically Asia camps for Japanese and other people who looked Japanese. They were putting concentration camps in America during the Second World War, which is weird enough as it is, and we'll probably look at some point in the future. But they also had a law that said no Chinese person could ever hold a judge position or any administrative position. They just wouldn't have them. They hated it.
That's so weird. But then I guess it's why people in the Deep South are arguably the most racist in America, because they're the ones that encounter immigrants from Mexico South America first.
And then that makes sense why on the East Coast, in New York and New England area, why Irish people probably got the most abuse. Because
that's where
so many Irish people coming over in that part. So you've got Irish on the East, Chinese on the West, and black people down South, and Americans can't handle it.
They took our jobs.
Anyway, there were of course segregation laws which extended to where black people can live. So what you ended up with is just a community of black people living in the project, secluded from white people. Now, the thing is, when you segregate a people and deprive them of the same rights as others, like not allowing them to get good jobs that pay well, you create a class of people who are constantly on the edge, barely able to live paycheck to paycheck. And what inevitably happens is people then turn to crime to support themselves, and OJ and his friends were really no different. likely not seeing a pathway for a future, he joined a gang called the Persian Warriors, which I think is quite cool. Mm. Now, OJ would be arrested several times with this gang. His childhood sweetheart and future wife, Marguerite, said of him at the time, he was a really awful person then. Still married him, though.
Yeah, maybe she'll, I could change him. Hibristophilia.
Ah! Yes. Now, after being arrested again, he happened to get introduced to a local sports star named Willie Mays. Now, this dude is a legendary baseball player for San Francisco Giants. Now, he was a black man who, despite his own difficulties, had encouraged OJ to stay clean and try to rise above it all. Now, to put in context, right, this is a guy coming up to a young black man who's committing crimes and saying, listen, you have to be better. I need you to be better. You're the new generation. I want you to be better. Rise above it all and be better. This dude is this famous in baseball. He is second only to a guy called Babe Ruth, who I'm sure we've all heard.
Babe Ruth.
Yeah, yep. The most famous baseball player in the world. This dude is second to him, right? That's how good he is. He is so loved by all. But because he's black, he was barred from buying a particular property in a particular area.
Right.
Because, like, you know, oh, no, black people can't buy property in this area. It's like, but this is one of the most famous baseball players, one of your best players, and you won't let him buy a property in this area. Which is bizarre, because you can just imagine on a Saturday afternoon or whenever they play baseball in America, you've got fans in San Francisco, like, chanting his name, then calling him racial slurs when he wants to buy a property in an area that they live in. Like, that's absurd. Mm. Like, it's, for me, this is, like, echoes now of, like, do you remember Euro finals in 2020 when we lost to Italy?
Oh, God, yeah. Fuck,
like,
that
the hate
down well.
That Rashford, Saka and Sancho got after they missed their penalties and stuff. Like that.
When the hate should have been directed towards Gareth Southgate for making them take penalties, but that's besides the point.
Yeah, yeah, the hate should be at the manager, not necessarily the players. But that's, I think that's an echo of that still. Like,
it is weird, isn't it? It is really weird, because they're like your players at the end of the day.
That's the thing that baffles me the most. It's like, they're your players who, like, take Rashford, or to be fair, Saka's probably the most relevant because he's better at the moment and he's popping off. But Saka can have, like, the best game and you'll have fans screaming his name, chanting his name, like, singing songs and stuff. But then, like, if he misses a chance for England, like, the racial abuse that he would get from his own fans, like, that's it. Yeah. Baffles me how
it happens a lot in Italy, like, as well. The racism in football in Italy is like rampant, but like, pretty much every club will have players that are black or other ethnicities, but they'll just racially abuse the other team's player despite knowing full well that they've also got, like, black players on there. It's weird.
It just
doesn't make sense. But then Syria, this is much aside, do you ever remember that campaign they tried to do? And it showed how out of touch generally Italy is with racism. They tried to do a Stop Racism campaign, and the images they used were of chimpanzees.
What?
And it was, I'll send you the link. It's fucking atrocious. Someone signed off on it, and it is just it's awful.
That's so
weird. It was like, no to racism, and then put pictures of chimps up. It horrific. That's the Italians for you.
Yeah, that's baffling, honestly. Anyway, the chat with Willie Mays worked, okay? OJ decided that he was going to turn his life around. He put his head down in school, and then he joined the football team. And that's American football for our English, for all the global audience, right? If I'm going to say football in this, I mean American football, right? If you was to take a global poll and ask, what sport do you think of if I say football, everyone's going to think of the English game, right, that's played with your feet. And I like American football, but it's named incorrectly.
I mean, I don't like, I watch the Super Bowl occasionally, but I don't get it, I'm not gonna lie. I much prefer soccer, to please the American audience amongst us.
Apparently football. Soccer originates in the UK. It's our word for football. And
probably, I think I've heard that before.
I've heard this, and I believe it to be true, but we used to call it soccer, and then when we exported football around the world and everyone just called it soccer, at some point we changed the name and called it football. I'm going to assume that's a working class decision to have done that, because they're like, but you play it with your feet. And then we just started calling it football because it made more sense. And now the world is like, but you started this.
And we'll just deny all knowledge of it. But then I guess, like, in Europe, it's Fußball and other variations.
Oh, football.
Yeah, so
anyway,
it makes sense.
Yes, so anyway, like I say, if I mention football in this, I'm referencing American football. Now, unfortunately for OJ, despite him putting his head down, contemporary education really isn't for him, right? He did very poorly at school. Now, he considered joining the military to fight in Vietnam, but seeing a friend come home injured, he decided that he would enroll at City College San Francisco, where, again, he wasn't great academically. But he did sign up to the college football team and played both offense and defense as a running back and a defensive back. And it turned out he's quite good, mainly at playing running back. And that's kind of a tough little role. Now, he was picked for the junior college All-American team as a running back and won the Prune Bowl with his college. This won him interest from several universities willing to give him a scholarship. I find this part weird. Like, American football, you need to be in a university if you want to play professionally. Otherwise, it doesn't happen.
Right, so, I American football in general, I don't understand it. I don't get the sport. It doesn't interest me, whatever. But one thing I do kind of like is college football. Like, I just think it's fucking fascinating that they can fill out, like, 70,000-seat stadiums for a university game. Whereas in my university, we had every sport going and no one gave a shit about anything that they did. They practiced on the field. They might have missed a lecture or two. It's mad. But then also, they don't get paid. So part of it does feel quite exploitative.
Well, yes and no. Because obviously, when we say they're not being paid, they are actually on a scholarship to be at the university. So them not being paid, instead of them being paid, they're saying, well, we're giving you an education whilst you play football. Although I know a guy who went out to Kentucky on a scholarship to play actual football from the UK. And I was like, do you have to like make sure you're getting your grades up and this kind of shit? You literally just have to scrape the barrel and pass. That's it. Like, because your main focus is the sport, not the education.
I think it's really good. And I genuinely believe if America actually tried with football, soccer, they could be really, really good if they actually gave a shit. But one thing I think they lack is they put too much effort into like the scholarships and like teaching kids properly. Whereas like kids here, kids in France, kids in Brazil, Germany, they practice on the streets.
Mm.
And like that makes good footballers. Like the Brazilians are the best in the world because they practice on the street. And that's what I think America misses.
Yeah, maybe. Well, in taking it away from soccer and talking about American football, I had a little look at this. They don't have academies like football clubs here in the UK do, right? So it's not like you can sign up for West Ham Academy and you join at the age of like 5 and you work, like you practice and earn your way up and they invest in you. They don't, apparently clubs don't have that in American football. Like the NFL as a whole has its own one that you can sign up when you're like at college age. But the reason why kind of makes sense later when we look at the draft. We'll look at that. Anyway, OJ would, like I say, have interest from lots of universities, but he would pick the University of Southern California, where he played for their team, the Trojans, as a running back. And again, I'm just going to say the obvious thing here. He's really fucking good at it. As a running back for the Trojans, he would accomplish over 3,000 rushing yards and 33 touchdowns. He was so good that he was entered into the College Football Hall of Fame, and when it came to the 1969 draft season, all eyes were on him. Now, American football has tons of rules and things that don't make a lot of sense, but one thing they do that I think is very clever is their draft system. Do you know how the draft system works? Because I know the basic.
I'm familiar with it. I think it's weird, but then that's coming from a British point of view.
Okay, right, so to break it down, and I'm sure if American listeners, you're probably going to tell us how it's actually done. Every year, the NFL holds a draft where teams can select players they like from their representative universities. Now, the way it's decided is that the team that performed the worst in the previous season gets first pick, and therefore can pick the best player. Now, the best team from the previous season picks last, and it's a way to kind of keep things fair. And I quite like that.
But then part of me is like, if you're playing a season and you know that you're not going to win anything, would you then not start throwing games just to get the first pick next season?
That's interesting. I wonder how they manage that.
I fucking would.
I wonder how they manage that.
This is the thing that bothers me about American sport. There's no threat. Whereas over here, you get relegated. There's threat. You lose out financially, all sorts. Whereas there, like, not getting first pick. I don't know. Who gives a shit? Because they can trade picks as well, can't they?
yes, you can trade picks for certain things. You say, oh, we'll take a player and we'll give you our place, our pick. So then a team can pick twice out of the new university prospects, the new hot young thing, and you'll get an experienced pro. Yeah, because the draft, I think, is opening soon or has opened soon. I know there's
I don't know.
I know there's trades going at the moment. Anyway, now the first draft pick player is usually the player most sought after. And for OJ, he was that guy. Buffalo Bills were the first to pick after an absolute abysmal season the previous, and they set their sights on OJ. Now, this is it, right? He's gone from a kid in a gang getting himself arrested to being first pick in the NFL draft, getting a professional contract. Now, not just any old contract, I will say. He negotiated with the Bills and bagged the most expensive NFL contract at the time, worth $650,000 over like 4 or 5 years. That's good money today.
What, in the NFL?
Yeah. Like, well, no, what? In the, right, if you were a player and you managed to bag yourself 650 grand at the age of 22 over your contract.
That's weird, because to me, like, this is how sport has ruined me, because I'm looking at players nowadays on like 100k a week.
No, but like, if you are like, so for instance, this is his rookie season, right? So this is the equivalent of bringing in an academy player.
Right,
and he's
okay.
Gonna
no,
earn
I suppose it does make sense.
650 grand.
But then saying that, there are kids nowadays on like crazy money.
Well, do you know what's interesting? Like, so he was one of yours, right? Michael Richards talks quite a lot about how when
he got shit for us as well. I just want to get that.
He was shit for you. That's why he meant that. But when he talks quite a lot about when he was at Man City and he got his first 50 grand a week contract and how he just was not mature enough to deal with this, having that amount of money.
It's ruined the sport. You're giving kids way too much money. But yeah, anyway. So yeah. I'm sure people are bored of us talking about sport.
We are talking
get to
a
the
lot.
Part where OJ fucking kills people.
Well, but do you know what's interesting?
Allegedly.
So yeah, we'll get to that later. I promise you that. But the NFL was such a big part of his story because it's what makes him a household name. So, you know, I don't care. We're talking about sport. Now, OJ is the most expensive player in the NFL at that time. And as a rookie, he has a lot of weight on his shoulders. Now, if this was a movie, we would go on to say how he carried that weight with ease, dominating his first season, but no. In his rookie season, he didn't quite live up to the standards set upon him. In fact, he wouldn't live up to the hype for another 3 seasons. Now, no. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Imagine you buy a player for 4 seasons, it's just shite. It's like the Timo Werner, yeah. Isn't it, at Chelsea? It's just
he's still shite as well.
One day, he's going to bag loads of goals. Now, the problem was a typical one that we would recognise in our game, James, right? Having an outstanding player, but not having a manager that knows what to do with them. Now,
Sounds like England. Yes.
That's such a fucking good... Oh, yeah. Two successive coaches refused to make OJ the centrepiece of their team, expecting him to just, you know, muck in with the rest of them, and they didn't get the best out of him. It wasn't until the Bills hired Lou Saban as their head coach did they then get the most out of him. Lou recognised how to properly utilise OJ and built his team around him. In the first season with Lou as head coach, OJ rushed over 1,000 yards and he was a league leader. So can you imagine, like, you've just done 4 seasons and they just think, this kid just ain't going to work out. And then a new guy comes in, knows what to do with him, and all of a sudden he's leading the entire league. At what he does,
yeah.
You'd be like, oh,
some people
right.
are just mismanaged.
Yeah, do you know what? I find that a lot, especially in football, when like you bring a player over and it just don't work out. I think Sancho is a really good example from Dortmund to Manchester United. Like, we're just.
I think
work.
Some players like they need the team built around them. They need to be like the main person, which is why I think right, Jack Grealish is shit now, because well, he's not shit. He's still very good, but he's not as good as he was at Villa. And I think Pep has destroyed him. Because nowadays he turns back, he passes the ball backwards. Whereas at Villa, it was like, get the ball to him, he can do whatever he wants. And he was magic. Mm. And now he's just a robot.
Yeah. No, we could talk about this all day, but we're not going to.
Yeah, some people are listening to this being like, this is not the normal episode.
Yes. In the next season, he broke 2 rushing records with over 2,000 yards under his belt and won that year's MVP title. Now, we could go into this heck of a lot more, right? But just to keep us going, because otherwise we're going to get sidetracked talking about football, his next 3 seasons with the Bills was a success, consistently hitting over 1,000 yards per season, except for his final season with the Bills after suffering an injury. Now, that season after suffering an injury, I think he got like 400 yards, but he literally didn't play that much. So eventually, he would be traded to his home team of San Francisco 49ers. Now, his two seasons with the team weren't as good as his previous seasons. He's now over 30. He's starting to slow down. Plus, the injury really isn't helping. And so OJ decided in 1979 that he would retire. And he retired an absolute hero. He was affectionately known as the Juice. And, you know, a play on his name, OJ. Do you know what's really interesting is apparently OJ Simpson didn't know his name was Orenthal until about the age of like 6 or 7 when he was at school.
Well, and people just called him OJ.
Yeah, everyone called him OJ because, you know, well, everyone just did. And then apparently like a substitute teacher at school was doing the register and Orenthal, he just didn't answer. He's like, who's that? I don't know who that is.
That's so mad.
Yeah. So OJ's inducted into the Hall of Fame and famously only ever played in one playoff, never making it to a Super Bowl. He's kind of like the OG Ronaldo. You know, like he never won a Champions League, but he was fucking ace. Like he was really good. He's like one of, you know, like you think of those great players that never made a Champions League. Like, I don't know, Zlatan, if you're that way inclined. Zlatan never got there.
No, yeah, it makes sense.
Now, there's this age-old tale of professional athletes who, when, you know, having given everything to their sport, not knowing what to do with themselves after they retire. You know, some get into coaching or punditry if they're lucky, but many fall into a depression or develop some kind of addiction like gambling. For OJ, though, he had no problems. He'd just do what he'd been doing all through his football career, acting. So it turns out OJ had been into acting for a long, long time, likely developing his love of the arts from his father, who, as we all know, was a rather well-known drag queen. Now, OJ had been acting during his university years, making small appearances in TV shows, you know, an episode here or there. And that's actually how he managed to bag himself that massive NFL contract from Buffalo Bills. So he's such a talent that every team wants him, and he knows that, right? But he really wanted to do acting, and he threatened that he would just not play football and just take up acting if they didn't offer him this massive contract, and they did.
Mad.
How cool is that?
You get laughed out of the room nowadays. Acting is not a viable career choice.
We should know that. I thought, was it easier back then? I don't know. Anyway. It's likely in his contract too that he could just keep acting whilst employed with the Bills, because during his football career, OJ would appear in over 12 movies and TV shows, including The Klansman, a movie called Firepower, which looks quite good, and Roots, the TV show.
I think I've seen that.
We've all seen it in school and history, I think.
I remember a scene from it specifically. Yeah, I'm not going to repeat it because it's very racist, but I think I've seen it.
Yeah, because isn't there a famous scene where like he gets given a new Christian name?
Yeah,
gets
a new name, Toby. Yeah, that's the scene I'm thinking of.
Yeah, that's really bad. Now, funny enough, it was after his record-breaking season where he won the MVP award in 1974 that OJ decided he wanted to be a full-time actor. Bear in mind, this boy's still got 5 years left in his football career at this point. And in 1974, he's like, I'd rather be an actor. On the set of a 1974 drama, The Klansman, OJ witnesses two of his fellow actors who were playing the leads and were very well known at the time, ordering food from their favourite restaurant in California and having it sent over by private jet. And he watched
that. Ridiculous.
Yeah. It's mad, isn't it? It's like, you know, that like Elvis used to get his favourite sandwich delivered via private jet.
That should never be allowed.
No, it shouldn't. But like, how cool is that? Like getting your Subway delivered basically from...
I mean, it's a baller move, but come on.
Yeah. Like, can you imagine, like, Deliveroo today, if it had private jets, that would be like the gold standard of Deliveroo.
No, for sure.
Now, seeing this inspired him to basically be as cool as they were. I just want to be as cool as they are. Despite the fact that he could probably afford to do this with his NFL contract as it is. But hey, maybe he thought, you know, they're cool. OJ's loved by football fans, right? Absolutely adored by football fans. But not everybody loves football. Everyone loves actors, right? So I just think there's this deep need in him to be recognised and loved. Do you know what I mean? I reckon maybe it's due to his dad leaving. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not projecting in any way, I swear. I just, maybe it could be that. Now, OJ made a point of choosing third and fourth leads on films. Throughout the 70s, there was this subgenre of movies called blaxploitation. It was supported by the movement of like the civil rights guys, like groups like the Black Power Movement, the Black Panthers, who really wanted black artists to reclaim their place in art, who were, they're making films for, featuring, and by black people, which is, it's cool. That's good. Great. Well done. Because you understand that that's not necessarily happening at the moment, so we need to help and push that. But OJ wanted to completely steer clear of this. He was like, no, not interested. I don't entirely know why, but I'm assuming that it's because of his fame as a football star. I reckon he would just be given lead roles because it's clout, and then say, oh, we've got OJ Simpson playing the lead role, this, that, the other. And I think he wanted to be seen by a bigger audience rather than being in movies that are targeted to one smaller audience. This dude has got big ambitions for being a star. Now, his first film, having retired from football, was a movie called Detour to Terror, a movie about a busload of tourists who are terrorised by a band of dune buggy driving locals. His acting career was pretty mediocre, kind of like Dwayne Johnson in the early years when he started making films. Do you know what I mean? Like
Scorpion King was fucking shit.
Well, Scorpion King was crap, but isn't he in, is it like, what's the one, he's like a tooth fairy? Do you know?
Oh, God, I don't know.
Yeah, but that kind of vibe.
Probably.
Nothing amazing or award-winning. It's just, you know, they're movies to get him experience, and he'll just do anything he can get his hands on.
Nothing Dwayne Johnson does now is award-winning. They're fun. Don't get me wrong. I'm not knocking him. I think he makes fun movies, but they're not, like, set-the-world-alight movies.
No, but when he first started, he was just doing movies so that he could just do movies because he needs experience.
Remember in The Mummy 2, where he is the Scorpion King, and it's just the worst CGI in the world?
Yeah.
That instantly comes to mind. That was fucking dreadful.
Yes. Now, OJ was lucky in this sense, right? Because of his NFL contract, he could afford to do mediocre films for a while. He's got all that money. Plus, he's working as a pundit on the side, so he's in no rush at all. He can just take what he wants and when he wants it. Which reminds me, it's like Arnold Schwarzenegger. We'll reference him in a second. Arnold Schwarzenegger had made loads of money just buying up property after his weightlifting career. So when he started doing acting, he was just like, listen, if I don't get an acting job for 5 years, that's absolutely fine. I'm already a millionaire.
Yeah, they have the time.
Yeah, and that's what's wrong with the acting career now, is fucking rich people. Now, it wasn't until the mid to late 80s where OJ's movie fame really began to kick off when he starred in all three Naked Gun movies alongside legend Leslie Nielsen. Those films are worth watching. Yeah, they're so fantastic. Good. And don't call me Shirley. Now, OJ was actually considered for the role of the Terminator in James Cameron's 1984 classic, but was sidelined when James Cameron met Arnold Schwarzenegger. And Arnold Schwarzenegger then told him, was like, oh, if he's going to be a robot, he needs to move like this, and he could do this. And he liked his voice and his accent and so on. He's like, oh, he's got to sound otherworldly. Now, at this point, OJ is a beloved figure by all. Football fans love him and call him a legend. Regular Americans know him as the guy who is in the comedy films and makes appearances on Saturday Night Live. He's the guy in the adverts who endorses Pioneer Chicken, Honey Baked Ham, and the Hertz car rental company. Everyone loves OJ. But in his personal life, things, yeah, they're a little wavy underneath. OJ married his childhood sweetheart Marguerite in 1967, aged 19, and would go on to have three children with her. Their marriage lasted 10 years, and towards the end of his football career, he met a woman named Nicole Brown, who was working as a waitress at a nightclub. He began an affair with her and would separate from his wife in 1979. A few years later, in 1985, OJ would marry Nicole, and they would bring into the world two children, all hunky-dory. But a few years later, OJ had been filming on the set of Frogman, a movie about a team of Navy SEALs who would take on special assignments from the government. It was going to be his action movie to rival the likes of Terminator and Rambo, but it was pulled and it never aired. Why? Well, why? On the night of June 12th, 1994, Nicole was found dead alongside her friend Ron Goldman outside her condo, and the movie star man OJ had been arrested under suspicion for their murder. So, what the hell happened? How was this guy who is arguably winning at life got himself in such a situation? Let's get into it.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I've just realised as well that sounds like a very elaborate intro. And it wasn't.
And the episode starts now. How long? How long have we got for? 35 minutes.
35 minutes. That's 2,000 words. What an intro. That is the longest intro I've ever wrote. No, it wasn't the intro. So let's look at Nicole briefly. And actually, no, probably now's the time, right? So if you're listening to this because you want a deep dive into the murder and the trial, that's not what this episode is about. This is about OJ's life. And this is one thing that, despite being a massive thing in his life, it is one thing in what is quite a lengthy career and life. So if you want us to sort of do a deep dive on the trial and the murder, we could probably do that in the future. But we're going to cover it very basically. So let's look at Nicole Brown. She was born in Frankfurt in West Germany in 1959. She and her family moved to America so that she could school there since her dad was American. Now, when she's 18, she meets OJ whilst working as a waitress at the Beverly Hills club called The Daisy. Now, he was 30 at the time when he met the 18-year-old Nicole, and he was still married to his first wife, who, I will also point out, is still quite heavily pregnant with their third child.
Oh, dear.
Oh, OJ. Oh, juice. OJ claimed that his meeting and subsequent relationship with Nicole was conceptualized by his management and he just went along with it. Now, I'm not entirely sure what he means, right? But I get what he's trying to do. He's trying to avoid all the blame and despisement that one gets for cheating on their pregnant wife with an 18-year-old.
Yeah, he doesn't want the publicity.
He doesn't want the publicity. He's like, oh, it was my management that did. But this is the thing. You know, like, I've heard this, that certain actors' management would be like, oh, you're going to be dating this person for a little while because it'd be really good for like the movie that's coming out in the next year or something. Do you know what I mean? And we're going to break you up before the movie so that you're back in the story. Do you know what I mean? I've heard all this.
I'm convinced that's what Tom Hiddleston and Taylor Swift was. Because that didn't make any fucking sense. That didn't make any sense, that relationship. I think they were both just using each other for clout.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. She's now with Travis Kelce. We'll see how that goes.
Again, that doesn't make sense to me, but they seem happy.
Yeah, although I did see a tweet actually talking about saying seeing Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift together is like the English teacher and the PE teacher being together at school, and it made me laugh.
No, it is exactly what it feels like.
Now, I reckon this like trying to hide the despisement of cheating on your pregnant wife with a woman that's 12 years younger than you is the exact reason why OJ and Nicole got married 5 years after they met and after he divorced his first wife in 1979. They got married in 1985, right? I think that's why they waited so long, is so that they could avoid all the media scrutiny that would come with it. Now, they would have two children together, but things weren't a bed of roses. OJ, it turns out, would be physically abusive to Nicole several times throughout their marriage, resulting in an arrest in 1989. OJ pleaded not guilty, but weirdly did acknowledge that given the evidence, he would likely be deemed guilty. What does that mean?
I'm going to say I didn't do it, but fair enough, you guys have done your research and it looks like I have.
Yeah, do you know what? I think it's one of those where, you know, when you admit a tiny bit of truth, but then deny the rest.
Yeah, not the whole truth. Yeah.
You go, oh, listen, we have had arguments. Yes, we've had arguments. Yeah. And yes, I've maybe sort of threatened to punch her, but I haven't actually punched her. And then you'll go, Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, he's admitted that bit. And that's quite hard. So maybe we'll just, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Ugh. Yeah. Don't like it. But he needn't worry. Okay. Nicole's own parents pleaded with her to drop the charges on the grounds that OJ had provided her father with some rather lucrative investment options.
Wow.
That's nothing awful. Nothing says parental love like watching your daughter get beaten by an ex-football player and then going, but he has given me some Bitcoin advantages.
Yeah, he's got money. That's what? Shocking.
That's shocking, isn't it? Now, Nicole would call the police dozens of times because of OJ's behaviour, but he was only ever arrested once. Now, some have speculated that this is the result of OJ hosting many a fundraiser and parties in his own back garden with the LAPD, making them quite uncomfortable about the idea of arresting the Juice. What's wild is that if you hear some of these 911 tapes of Nicole calling for help, you can hear him yelling at her in the background, just incoherent, just fucking raging, screaming at her. And it's quite intimidating to listen to, if I'm honest. It's easily found as well, because it was all leaked during the big trial. But yeah, it's weird. And you know me, I will listen to him look at all this shit.
Yeah.
I actually listened to a podcast talking about this, and they go into trial in depth. And the writer of it was like, oh, if you are researching this case, I would advise you don't, you know, listen to these tapes. And I was like, but you have. I don't understand why it's okay for you to do it. It really annoyed me.
If you want to listen to the tapes, go listen to the tapes. Just know what they're about before you get into it.
Yeah. And I think he was saying something like, oh, to respect her, don't listen to the tapes. I was like, but it's out there. Like, I don't know. Anyway, at one point...
I'm going to comment on that. Anyone, and I include us in this, that does true crime podcasts, there's a moral line there that when you start talking about people's deaths. Because, like, full disclosure, like, we make a little bit of money out of this, so we are therefore profiting off other people's deaths, and so is every other fucking true crime podcaster. We are, like, you can't pretend to be the fucking morality police.
Yes, thank you. Listen, like, so I listen to a couple of true crime podcasts, and there's one that's a really popular one at the moment, and their whole thing, and I think we said this in the Sylvia Likens episode, because that's brutal, and it's not very nice at all, and I remember my mum listening to it, and she was going, did you have to go in that much detail? And no, we didn't. And the podcast that I'm a fan of also did an episode on this, but they refused to even name the woman who murdered Sylvia. They refused to name her because they didn't want to give her the publicity or any sort of clout. But I thought that seems unfair because that's part of Sylvia's story. Regardless of the fact that it's a horrible fucking part of it, she is a part of that story. And to ignore that, you're just not telling her story as it is. And I don't know. I feel like telling the whole story as is, regardless of whether you like it or not, it fucking happened. And to try and like sugarcoat their experience, I don't think is fair. If I was the victim, I don't know, I'm not in the situation, but like, if I was the victim, I'd be like, no, tell my story as it fucking is, because it was brutal, it was horrible, and I went through it.
Yeah, no, I agree. If something happened, it's there to be told.
Yeah, yeah. Go listen to the tapes. Anyway, at one point, the 911 operator says to Nicole, quote, okay, just stay on the line. Nicole replies, quote, I don't want to stay on the line. He's going to beat the shit out of me. That's fucking awful. Like,
it's quite damning, isn't it?
It's damning because you know he's fucking done it before and she knows what's about to happen.
Yeah.
It's horrid. Now, on the 25th of February 1992, Nicole divorced OJ, citing irreconcilable... I can't say that fucking word. On the 25th of February 1992, Nicole divorced OJ, citing irreconcilable differences. A year later, they attempted to reconcile their differences at the behest of her parents, but it was not to be. Her parents, who remember, when she got him arrested for fucking domestic abuse, the parents were like, but he's got contacts for money and we can make some money here. Stay with the abusive man.
Hmm.
When she finally divorced him, they were like, oh, maybe you should just give it a go again. Just try better. And this time, don't piss him off. That annoys me so much.
Yeah.
Now, late in 1993, police were called once again to the house where they found an irate OJ and Nicole with a black eye. OJ was not arrested, and it wasn't investigated any further. In fact, Nicole would go on to call the cops around 20 times that year for his behaviour. Now, after that, she decided to completely cut ties with OJ and just start her life anew. It's here that we'll introduce Ronald Goldman. Now, Ronald Lyle Goldman was born in 1968 in a place called Buffalo Grove near Chicago, Illinois. His upbringing was pretty normal. His parents split up when he was around 7. He spent some time living with his mum before moving in with his dad. He was a smart guy. He wanted to study psychology at university. He dropped out when his family moved to Los Angeles and he would just go out with them. And that must have been quite nice to relocate from Illinois, which, as you know, is the Windy City, it can be a bit chilly at winter. Now you're in California, right? I bet the whole lifestyle is just so different, you know, with the good weather, the sea, all that kind of stuff. And it seems that he really enjoyed it. He took up surfing, volleyball. He enjoyed nightclubs. He really made the most of it. He made money on the side working as a tennis coach and as a waiter, and had previously worked as a camp counselor for children with cerebral palsy. So all round, Ronald sounds like a really nice guy. Nothing really bad here, okay? But by all accounts, it's said that Ronald met Nicole when she let him borrow her Ferrari. Now, I couldn't really find out how they met or in what circumstances you would lend someone your Ferrari, but that's what happened.
You'd have to be close to someone to lend them a Ferrari.
Yeah, or, you know, just like them
enough. I don't
lend
my Ferrari to just about anyone.
No, my Ferrari stays very firmly in my garage. Now, he took it to see a friend who he said, well, it was Nicole's. He was like, it's not mine. No, 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 this is Nicole's. She's a friend of mine. Never said that they were together. They supposedly grew a really quick friendship, often hanging out. They'd go out to get coffee together. And it, as far as everyone says, it's a totally platonic relationship from all who knew them. Nicole and Ronald have never said that they are anything more than friends, and everyone who knew them also agrees. The only people who say that it's not is OJ and the people that support him. Yeah. And we don't know why, because there's no clear reason to suggest otherwise. So, on the evening of the 12th of June, 1994, Ronald Goldman was working a shift at the restaurant and would be finishing soon when he receives a call from Nicole. She'd been to that restaurant earlier that day with her mother after they had watched their daughter in a recital. In fact, OJ attended this recital, and it was said that when people saw OJ at the recital, they were all quite scared and intimidated by him. He looked like a guy who was possessed when he was there.
Oh.
Just saying. Now, Nicole had left her sunglasses at the restaurant where her and her mother had dined. Now, she asked Ronald if when he finished his shift, he wouldn't mind bringing them back to her house. And he was like, yeah, fine, happy to do it. No worries, that's fine. I'll be over there like 10-ish or whatever. Now, on his way to Nicole's, he stops by his apartment where he spoke to his friend. See, they had plans to go out that night, you know, out. And this was the last. This was the last time Ron was seen alive. Sometime after midnight, a white dog is seen roaming the streets outside Nicole's house where she lived with her children. It startled residents when they discovered that the red was because the dog had been traipsing through the blood of Nicole and Ron, who were lying lifelessly outside of the house. When the police got to the house, they were pleased to find that Nicole and OJ's children were inside the house and were completely safe, and I don't know if they knew what happened at this point. Now, at the scene of the murder, they found Nicole lying in the fetal position with defensive wounds on her hands and 7 stab wounds on her neck and scalp. In fact, her neck had been so severely sliced that it severed both her jugular veins, leaving her practically beheaded. Ron was found just down the path with between 22 to 24 stab wounds in his torso, left thigh, face and neck. They also discovered a black glove with blood on it. And this was a very key piece of evidence.
Mm.
Early on the 13th of June, police visited OJ to make him aware of the death of his ex-wife. They were met with no answer at the door. One of the officers, having a look around, noticed blood on the door of OJ's Ford Bronco truck that was parked outside. Na, 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 na. Now, beginning to fear that OJ may also have been targeted, the officers forced entry into the house. Once in, they found the house was completely empty. When they checked the guest house, they were met with a guy called Cato Kalin, who was a friend of OJ's. When asked about OJ's whereabouts, he told them that he'd not seen him all day. While in the house, they decided they'll have a sneaky little look around. They'll be like, oh, listen, we're not at liberty or have a warrant to actually have a look around the house, but whilst we're walking towards the door, we're going to have a good old bog at everything.
Yeah.
So this is when they discover one black glove. And it was later determined that this was the opposite to the one they found at the murder scene with blood on it. Pretty sus. If this was Among Us, you'd be slapping the fucking red button and being like, disgust.
Yeah, you're hitting that button, being like, OJ is sus.
Yeah, OJ sus. Now, the police eventually contacted OJ, who was in Chicago. So it can't be him, right? Surely, he's in Chicago. He's nowhere near the crime. But wait. OJ had only got to Chicago that day, having booked the flight the day of the murder and took off around midnight. Now, an estimated 2 hours after the murder of Nicole and Ron. So,
right. So the timing adds up.
The timing adds up. This is more than enough time to do the crime and then fuck off to an airport and then fly private, go over. For now, OJ is just the father of two kids who have tragically lost their mother, but he is under suspicion, and the police want to arrest him. Now, I've no idea why this is a thing. It seems that the LAPD just don't want to make a fuss of this for the media, and maybe because they're all like, maybe they all like OJ. Remember, they've not arrested him at any like times before, so they just not really want to do it now. They want to keep it quiet, let him have his own sort of privacy and all this kind of shit. They give him the privilege of handing himself into the police station on the 17th of June, the day after Nicole's funeral. They're like, listen, turn up to the station. We won't make a fuss. We won't turn up to your door. You just need to come to the station at the right time.
Hmm.
Now, he agrees to this. He's like, yeah, fine, no worries. At Nicole's funeral, which is attended by her children and her family, OJ attends the funeral, flanked by his two lawyers, Robert Shapiro and Robert Kardashian. Yes, that Kardashian.
Because I know there's a whole thing that came out a few years back being like, is he Courtney's dad? Is it Courtney? It's one of the Jenners.
Yeah, there are rumours that OJ's actually the father of one of the Kardashian kids.
Yeah.
Maybe. Anyway.
Because of that whole thing that... We discussed this in the office, actually. This is how fucking awful it was. It quickly turned into a conversation of who's more attractive, Nicole Brown or Kris Jenner. I don't know how it got to that point. Because I think he had an affair with Kris Jenner, I think.
Well, this is the rumour, isn't it? That one of the Kardashian kids is his. But it's never been confirmed that he had an affair with Kris Jenner.
I think he denied it.
Yeah. I think Chris has too.
I don't know.
It doesn't matter. This is not TMZ. Now, at Nicole's funeral, right, the weirdest thing that I've heard about this funeral is that when OJ stepped up to the open casket to look at Nicole, this guy leaned in and kissed her on the lips one last time, which is fucked up in several ways. One, what the fuck are you doing? Not only is she a corpse, she is your ex-fucking wife. You got no business kissing her while she's alive. You definitely got no business kissing her now that she's dead, right?
Mm.
Two, the audacity to even turn up to the funeral when you're suspected of killing her is just... And remember, you're divorced because you're the abuser. Why would you... Like...
Yeah.
And three, what the fuck, America, right? What is your love about open caskets at funerals? Nobody needs to see the body of their friend or loved one. We all know they're dead. That's why we're sat here having a funeral. Just put up a big fucking picture of them smiling and I will remember that. I don't need to see them dead. I don't get America's fascination with open caskets.
That's interesting because we don't really have them here, do we?
No, we don't have them at all.
I mean, nowadays it's kind of get them in the furnace, burn them as quickly as possible, and here they are in a jar sort of thing.
Yeah, it's really weird. You just have a big picture of the person, and we can all look at them when they're happy and smiling, and we'll remember that.
I've never thought about this, but if I went to an open casket, it would freak me out.
Yeah, really. You know, I find that odd. Listen, yeah. Americans, let us know why it's a thing. Why would you want to see that person dead? I don't know. Is it a closure thing? I don't know.
Well, just a check. Oh yeah, there they are. Actually dead.
Just tickle him under the armpit. Just make sure.
Knew he was lying.
Scumbag. Now, the day after the funeral, guess who doesn't show up to the police station to hand himself in?
Oh, OJ.
Oh, the juice. Oh, I feel like you need to show where they're just like, oh, the juice. just keeps fucking up all the time. But they're like, oh, but he's the best fallback we've got. Come on. So where is OJ? Well, he's having a jolly old road trip. That's what's happening. His lawyers, they ain't got a Scooby-Doo where he is. But he did leave them a note saying goodbye. That he had a good life, he'd made good friends. He also begged that the media leave his children alone. He also stated that he has nothing to do with Nicole and Ronald's murder, which is weird. It's like, why leave a note and fuck off and then just say that? It's like, I promise you, I have nothing to do with this murder, and it's nothing to do with the fact that I just ran away whilst I'm under suspicion. Now, by all intents and purposes, this is a suicide note, okay? And his following behaviour kind of backs that. OJ was in the back of a white Ford Bronco, a copy of the one he'd had taken away. Remember, he had one that had blood on the handle of his door. His friend, a guy called AC Cowling, he has an exact copy of that car. It was a brand new car. They were like rich ex-NFL Buffalo Bills players, and they were like, let's get the same car together. So, like I say, he's in the back of the Ford Bronco, and he sat in the back as a passenger whilst his friend AC Cowling, like I say, who played for him at Buffalo Bills, was driving. Now, I feel quite sorry for AC here. It's likely that he was just trying to help an old friend who he believed to be innocent and was just going through a tough time, and he just wanted to help him out. So when he was like, please come pick me up, I need a drive. And he's like, yeah, sure, fine, I'll take you, it's fine. What's in no doubt is that AC's good intentions almost backfired. OJ had a gun and was waving it around, threatening AC, but also was pressing it to his own head, threatening to kill himself. Mm. When the police were made aware that OJ was on the run, they chased him down the highway. They managed to get AC on the phone when they found out OJ had a gun and was threatening to use it unless they backed off. So, fearing for both of their lives, the LAPD obliged. What followed was a two-hour-long low-speed car chase along the highway. It was so widely reported that people just lined the highway to get a glimpse of the Bronco followed by 20 police cars. In fact, people on the other side of the highway fully just stopped in their tracks, got out their cars and started gawping as swarms of news helicopters were following the chase, beaming it to TV screens, where it was said around 100 million Americans watched it.
Isn't it the most watched news broadcast of all time?
Yeah, it's a third of America's population watched news broadcast. And the thing is, so many newscasters were competing for the rights to beam this on the TV that you'd be watching it and then all of a sudden just cuts and it's a different angle because a new news channel had paid enough money to get it on the telly. It was weird. Now, when OJ finally allowed AC to return him home where he would hand himself in, the police gave him an hour to speak with his mother and say his goodbyes before being placed in cuffs. That's still bizarre to me. That
you just arrest him on the spot.
Just fucking arrest him. Why does he need an hour to now talk to his mum? He gets a phone call by dint of being arrested. That's a legal right for him. Why does he now need an hour before he gets arrested? Like, I don't get why they're pandering to him. And this is a big thing, and they're saying about corruption in the LAPD, how that's, you know, anyway. Now, with OJ locked up, the police could now properly investigate. They discovered a sock with blood on it and separate stains of blood in his bed and bathroom. Now, when they ran tests on this, they discovered that it had the blood of OJ, Nicole, and Ron on them. It's all fucking red flags, man. Now, with such glaring evidence, you'd think that this case would just, you know, be a real fast guilty, not bang, bang, bang on the gavel. But it wasn't. This case went on for 11 months. And thanks to OJ's very good lawyers, including a guy called Johnny Cochran, who famously said, quote, if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. The jury found him not guilty. But why? Why the fuck was he found not guilty? OJ's lawyers argued that he was the victim of racial prejudice from the LAPD and they had framed him, which makes no fucking sense considering at no point did they arrest him for any of his crimes before abuse. They gave him all the fucking leeway he could possibly get given when he was being going to be arrested for a double murder. And you want to then turn that on its head and say, actually, they didn't like him. They've planted it on him and framed him. That makes no sense.
That's why it became so polarizing, wasn't it? Because white people wanted him found guilty, and black people sort of saw that he was kind of not representing them, but like it was a race trial, and they celebrated when
he was found not guilty.
There's a video of Oprah actually like live broadcasting the verdict, and the audience is a mixture of white and black people, and the difference in reactions is staggering.
Yeah, there was one poll that I managed to look at, and I don't know the sort of veracity of it all, but apparently 87% of white Americans thought that the guy was guilty, and 57% of black Americans thought he was innocent. So over half of black Americans were like, yeah, no, he's innocent, whereas like nearly 90% of white Americans were like, yeah, no, he's guilty.
Hmm. Didn't he have a predominantly black jury as well? Wasn't that a contentious point?
I think that was a thing. There's a really good series called The People versus OJ that's got like David
Netflix.
Schwimmer. Yeah, David Schwimmer plays the Kardashian lawyer. It's fascinating. It's so good. It's really, really good. Anyway, the main thing that they used was the gloves that inextricably linked him to the murder. It was hard to go against until the prosecution scored a colossal own goal. They asked OJ to put the glove on, thus proving that he could have worn the gloves when murdering Nicole and Ron. That would have been like an open and shut. Like, look, there you go. The gloves fit. They're clearly his. There you go. But OJ played on his acting credentials and made a whole show of not being able to fit the glove on his hand. And have you seen this bit? Have you seen, like, it's quite famous.
I never have.
Oh my God. Like, it's, why you should never have asked him to put the glove on himself, because you watch him, one, the guy's already got rubber gloves on underneath, like what I don't know, a manicurist might wear, do you know what I mean? Kind of like latex guy. He's already got latex gloves on, and then they're asking him to put on a leather glove whilst his hand is probably already quite warm inside this. Also, apparently this is a fact, Johnny Cochran, the very famous lawyer, asked him to stop taking his arthritis medication about a week before they were going to do this. So his hand started to swell up and he couldn't move it as much.
Oh, really?
So that's part of the reason he was like really struggling to get this glove on. And you can see him just looking around being like, oh, look, see, I can't quite get the glove on. I'm really trying to get the glove and it's not quite going on. Also, he came out and said, I would never wear those gloves. I think those gloves are trash. I personally would never wear them because they're not fashion-y. And yet, if you actually look, there's a sports broadcast where he's doing punditry for the NFL. He's wearing the exact same fucking gloves.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. But it's one of those that, like, when you start adding all that shit up, you're like, well, of course he's fucking guilty. What the fuck? Like, how did he get away with that? But no, the glove didn't fit. He played on his acting career and he just couldn't put it on. So it's estimated that over 100 million people watched the not guilty verdict on their TVs. After the trial, there was a weird separation of opinions. All the facts speak to him being the culprit of the murder, but thanks to some cock-ups and OJ's team being better lawyers, they were able to spin it in a way that got him off. Now, despite this, Ron's family filed a wrongful death civil lawsuit against OJ, and he lost, making him liable for Ron's death and, by extension, Nicole's. That I find completely fascinating because, and I think this proves that the murder trial was just all good spin from very good lawyers and fuck-ups from very bad ones, because they managed in a civil one to go, yeah, no, fair enough, he's probably at fault for these people's murder.
Yeah.
So, officially, he is not guilty of murder, but he is liable for their death. I don't know. Now, because of this, OJ was ordered to pay £33.5 million in damages to Ron's family. Now, OJ's a pretty wealthy guy, but he's not £33.5 million in the back pocket wealthy. So he began selling off his possessions, including prestigious awards that he'd earned during his NFL career, netting himself $500,000. Eventually, he would default on his mortgages and lose his home that he'd had for 20 years. The lawsuit fully killed his life. Ron's parents just didn't give a shit. They fully were like, nah, bro, you fully fucked up our son. We're going to fuck up your life. And they would chase him with lawsuits at every step. This family, they wanted the rights to all of his possessions, any rights to images that he'd done in adverts and future stuff. They wanted the rights to it. Any book or TV deal he would make, they wanted a cut of it. In fact, you know, there's that famous book, If I Did It, that OJ wrote in like 2005, 2006, the family managed to then put in a lawsuit and said, right, we want ownership of this book. Now, bear in mind, OJ had written most of this book at this point before Ron's family got involved. They won the court case and basically they got to have ownership of the book. So they're like, yeah, this has been written by OJ. But what they then did is start adding their own bits to the book to counteract everything he said, which apparently is all factual, right? And then they changed the title. So it says, If I Did It, Confessions of a Killer, right? But what they've done is, and you've got to look it up because it's absolutely hilarious. On the book cover, it says, If I Did It, but they've put the if, in terms of a graphics design thing, they've put the if inside the I, and it's really small. So if you look at it from afar, it just says, I did it, Confessions of a Killer.
That's funny. I think his dad, Ron's dad, spoke out after OJ died and was basically like, good riddance, fuck him.
How is that guy still alive? Like, this guy's
God knows.
Old. But yeah, no, fair enough. This family are fucking funny in this. The way they chased him, it's quite good. Now, they properly drove this man to the brink and, you know, good on him. OJ, after the trial, had a tough time. His work completely dried up and he was existing on selling his memorabilia. Now, the thing with OJ that was so tricky is that all of the evidence said he was guilty of this double murder, but he's officially found not guilty, but then he is sued for a wrongful death. So he's kind of like Marmite, right? Lots of people hate him, calling him a murderer, but then there are plenty of others who still think he's innocent and back him. Now, by 2006, he was desperate, and apparently so was another TV station. See, at the time, the TV prank show Punk'd was very popular, and one network decided it needed its own rival. So, who could they get to host this new show? What about accused double murderer OJ Simpson? He could do it. That'll get viewers. Now, it was exactly as you'd expect. It's a hidden camera show, and when the jig's up, OJ would jump out and say, quote, you've been juiced, and it was all fun and games and having a great time. The show is absolutely fucking bonkers, right? Not least because they have a murderer hosting the show. The intro to this TV show is OJ dressed as a pimp in a mansion on a throne rapping while surrounded by strippers, many of which are topless.
Right.
It's really weird. It's weird. Now, some of these pranks, you'll be interested to know, some of these pranks included OJ white-facing as an old man and trying to sell the Ford Bronco that he had famously drove off in.
Really?
With a bullet hole in the front that he'd circled as an O and he'd signed it. And he was trying to sell it. And in fact, at one point, he's selling it to this woman and he's like, oh, this is good. If you need to get out in a bind real quick, this has got great escapability. Like, it's really good. It's quite funny, but also really dark. Yeah. But also, I can't tell whether this stuff he's okay with or whether he's being exploited. Now, if he is, like, he probably deserves it. Yes, he's a double murderer, nearly decapitated his ex-wife. But at the same time, it's kind of like... Who was the guy we talked about, the cannibal in Japan? Issei Sagawa. Like, when we were saying, like, he's being exploited, and he either knows or he doesn't know, but he also knows he's going to make money from it, so he's just going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
Exactly it.
He knows he's...
If the second you've been found not guilty, providing no new evidence comes up, like, that's it, you're not guilty.
That's the thing, and that's why he's so divisive, because officially... In a court of law, he was found not guilty, but all the evidence leans to the fact that he is guilty. So how do you separate yourself from that?
It'd be really interesting if anyone's listening to this, like, as someone who is a OJ didn't do it standpoint.
Yeah.
If you are, message us, because I think we're both kind of firmly like, he obviously did it.
Yeah, and he's dead now, so you can't be litigious anymore, so...
No, you can't.
But yeah, no, honestly, if you are an OJ backup, honestly, get in touch with us, because I'd really be keen to hear, like, the opposite side and to sort of justify and defend a lot of this, you know, quite a lot of evidence. Now, Juiced aired as a one-time pay-per-view special and was later released on DVD. So you can get hold of it, and it's, yeah, really bizarre. Now, OJ would have other legal troubles. He was chased for not paying taxes correctly and was end up owing over $100 million, which, when he can't even pay $33 million to the Ronald Goldman's family, he ain't paying that. In 2001, he was caught up in some road rage, which led to him yanking a guy's sunglasses off his face, injuring him. He was charged with battery and was later looking at a 16-year prison stint, but was acquitted, because this guy's really good at getting out stuff. Then there was the stealing of cable TV, which I think is really sad. He was sued for this, for stealing cable TV. The guy just wants to watch some NFL. You know what I mean? Like, cable TV is expensive, I bet. He can't afford it. I find it quite sad. And then there was Vegas. Now, they say what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, but not this time. In 2007, OJ, down on his luck, juiced, hasn't quite worked out, likely feeling as though he wanted to get some part of his old life back. He devised a plan to get his old memorabilia back, claiming that it had been stolen, despite the fact he'd sold all of it. But he was saying, oh, it has been stolen, I've been forced to do this, right? So, on September 13th, 2007, he led a group of armed men... into a hotel in Vegas, where he entered the room of a man named Bruce Fromont. Now, this dude is a sports memorabilia collector and seller, and had acquired a lot of OJ's things. The guy's actually a fan. The men stormed the room, guns in hand, and stole as much as they could get their hands on. Now, because of this, OJ's looking for very particular things. In fact, he said to one of his accomplices, quote, "Look, Tom, this is not memorabilia. These are personal artifacts that were stolen from me. My football that I was holding in my arm when I rushed for 2,000 yards. The ring from my wife who died that I was going to give to my daughter." As a human, I kind of sympathise.
Yeah.
Like, these are your treasured objects. But
of course, they're sentimental items.
Yeah, but the way he was like, also, the ring from my wife who died. It's like, yeah, we know.
Yeah, it's a weird way. So, she died. Not sure if you're aware, but she did.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure you're aware. It was kind of the biggest thing of the century. Fromont, the dealer, was not harmed during the robbery, but he was shaken up. So much so, he actually suffered several heart attacks in the days following the robbery and suffered brain damage because of it. This guy flatlined.
Jesus Christ.
This guy flatlined twice.
Oh my God.
Actually died twice and was brought back. This guy's life was ruined from this robbery. Because of the heart attacks and the brain damage, he lost earnings. He then couldn't make up any of those earnings, and he just basically ruined his life. He never made
his
money back.
That's wild.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. He was shook to his core.
Yeah, properly. But despite this, he doesn't harbour much resentment to OJ. He's a sports fan, and he said, quote, "He is a good man. He made a mistake. I could have died that night. They only needed to pull the trigger and I would have been dead." Great words from Fromong there.
Who nearly died twice. Yeah,
he nearly died twice because of this thing. And he's like, oh, no, he's a good man. He's just made a mistake. Fuck off. Anyway.
Whereas if OJ just came up to him, knocked on the door in the middle of the day and was like, hey, I kind of want some of my stuff back, I'm sure this guy would have been accommodating. Seems like he really likes him.
Interestingly, Bruce Fromont actually said, if OJ had come up to me and just had a conversation with me, I'm sure we could have sorted something out.
Yeah, instead of bursting into his room with a gang full of men with guns.
Yeah, yeah. And he keeps like accrediting OJ to not killing him, because he was saying, oh, they were pointing guns at me, but OJ said,
no,
don't point the guns
ridiculous.
At him.
No, that's ridiculous. You can never accredit someone for not killing... Like, that's like me walking down like the shop and back and being like, everyone I passed... they could have killed me, but they didn't, so credit to them. Like, it's fucking bollocks. You should never credit someone for not killing you.
Also, he did storm your room with guys with guns, so like it or not, it nearly happened. That wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for OJ, so... Anyway,
bizarre.
OJ aged 60 years old at the time, was found guilty of robbery and sentenced to 33 years in prison, which is arguably a life sentence for someone that age.
Mm.
But after serving nearly a decade at the Lovelock Correctional Facility, he was released on parole for good behaviour. Under certain conditions, of course, like not being allowed to travel abroad, no contact with these co-conspirators, and not drinking excessively. Now, this is a bit of a funny one, because at the end of the day, OJ did end up in prison and served, you know, relatively speaking, quite a long time, almost a decade, which for the families of Nicole and Ronald must have been something, because he didn't do anything for a double murder. At least he went in prison for something. But to see him get released on good behaviour, that must be a real kick in the teeth.
Hmm.
Now, just a few years ago, OJ decided that he would go back to where it all began for him. He started to make appearances to Buffalo Bills games, meeting fans and commenting on the games afterwards, posting it on social media. This caused a heck of a lot of backlash, people saying that he shouldn't be allowed to go out and enjoy the game and lap up the fan attention. And it's a tricky one, because like I said, look, legally speaking, he was found not guilty, so he should be allowed to go out and just enjoy the game. But I also get why people don't like the
fact of course.
That living a life.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed this week, like, reading the comments of people under articles about OJ, and one of them that I remember that really tickled me, that after the trial for the double murder, I believe he said, "I will not rest until I find their killers,"
yes,
or something along those lines. And then someone said, and to be fair to him, he just didn't tell us that he'd be looking exclusively on golf courses, because that's where he just spent most of his time.
Oh, that's so funny. That's so funny. Now, in May of 2023, he was diagnosed with cancer. I think he had prostate cancer, and boldly claimed that he would beat it. And he did okay for a time, but the cancer was tougher than OJ. Some of his last appearances were on a YouTube podcast talking about football. And on there, he looked, I think it was like 4 months ago, and he looked quite frail and skinny. Yeah. OJ Simpson would die from his cancer on April 10th, 2024, this week. Damn.
So, because of the work I do, we usually look at people's last posts and like do a article on what they last posted. And like, it's, someone's dead, so it's not funny, but it's kind of funny, because I think we can kind of laugh because he's an asshole. His last post was people saying, OJ's got cancer, he's dying, and he's in hospice. And his last post is him sat in front of a swimming pool being like, "I'm fine, I'm not dying, I'm not in a hospice." That's his last post.
Oh, that's a bit awkward.
And now he did, when he was clearly in hospice and dying.
Yeah, bless. I don't know. He just didn't see it coming. Anyway, OJ's legacy is a weird one. He's so tied up with pop culture that he'll likely never go away. He's in some of the funniest classic films of their time in Naked Gun. He is a Hall of Famer in the NFL, and even in 2019, despite everything, was named in the National Football League 100th anniversary all-time team. His trial was known as the Trial of the Century and kicked off the age of the 24-hour news cycle. He split opinion and was starting to make a comeback 20 years after his crime, with a movie lined up in 2025 called Zombies on a Plane. Whether you like it or not, OJ is a part of pop culture history, and he's not going anywhere. And that's it.
Even though he defo did it.
We can say 100%. We can say he definitely fucking did it, and he just he got away. He got off scot-free.
But I think the balls of the man to get away with such a blatant double murder, to get away with that and then continue to commit crimes, that's audacious. That is confidence.
The thing is, and I don't know if this is fair, I don't know sort of how to like maybe word this or where it's kind of going, but like, I can't justify the murders in no way. That's not a justifiable thing. He's an abuser, end of, right? But there is like a lot of evidence that says ex-NFL players have a tendency of being more violent because of the violent sport, the brain damage, all that kind of stuff. And I don't know whether he was a victim of that and that's what made him aggressive and violent. I don't know. But I can get the robbery a little more, because this guy has basically got nothing left. And all he wants maybe is just a bit of his old life back, something to hang on to from his career, previous life. I just don't necessarily agree with the way he did it.
I see where you're coming from. To speak on 2 points, I think the robbery is because of the double murder, because obviously Ron Goldman's family then took all of his money.
Mm.
So therefore, he had to do this. He wouldn't have had all that stuff taken away from him had he not committed the crime. So it's sort of a cause and cause thing. But then, like, there is obviously the whole thing in the NFL about head injuries and stuff, and that's a massive thing that people need to look into. But it's the same, I think, in all major sports, especially where you're performing at the highest level and you're getting paid a lot of money. Like, one day that just stops. You're not going to training anymore. You're not making that money anymore. And I think that, even for, like, footballers over here, because you retire at, what, mid-30s, that's young. And suddenly your life is just like, you've gone from performing at your highest level every single day, having hundreds of thousands of people cheering your name, to nothing in like that. Like, that is going to have a mental impact on anybody. Like, that's why a lot of former athletes like fall into like gambling, drinking, drugs, because they don't know what to do. They need that vice. They need something to make them feel alive again, because they like run off the adrenaline. And I'm not saying that that's justification for him killing people.
Yeah.
But his mental state was not clearly not good.
Yeah, no, Paul Merson, Razor Ruddock, they're good examples of ex-professional
Gazza,
athletes.
Even though he Gazza. Was fucking drinking during playing, but
that was
Maradona was just on coke his entire time. But
yeah, no, that's a good example of, like, you know, athletes who then just once they've done. But this is the thing with OJ, that's not an excuse, not that ever is an excuse. But like, I don't think that's a thing for him, because once his career's over, he just goes straight into films. Like, he's actually just building. He's making money on top of money. He's building on buildings, right? I think for him, maybe there was that brain stuff. I don't know. But then we also know that when he was a kid, he was in a gang and he was quite, you know, he did commit crimes as a kid. So maybe it's just, I don't know, maybe it's just who he is. Maybe we should stop.
He was clearly he was abusive to Nicole. And then I think, well, no one really knows what happened that night, but he must have seen Ron and Nicole together, assumed that they were in some sort of relationship, got jealous and killed them. I guess that's the main theory.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's probably what happened. But yeah, I mean, that's one of those things, like I said at the end of the outro there, like it or not, this dude is part of cultural history and he will be around forever.
Yeah. Or to play devil's advocate, someone committed a brilliant murder and just got away with it. That wasn't OJ.
Yes. Yeah, good point. Yeah. They managed to frame it on him. That's good. That's smart.
Yeah, someone did really well.
Yeah. There was a theory that it was like a Colombian gang that put out a hit. But there's nothing to back it.
No, he did it.
Anyway, if you've got any ideas as to maybe why he did or didn't do it, let us know. I'll be genuinely curious to hear what your feedback is on the case, because it's a fascinating one. Like I said, we didn't go too heavy on the case or the evidence and all that kind of stuff, because, you know, we ain't got time for that. But more to the point, like I say, we're not really historians to be talking about history shit anyway. But we're not lawyers in any way, so I can't really go through any of that kind of stuff and be like, oh, well, they made a faux pas there. What a dickhead here making a fucking lawyer mistake. I'm not going to do that. But if you'd like us to have a look at it, we can definitely try. But yeah, what do you think, James? You have definitely of the opinion, yeah, he definitely killed her. That's it.
Oh, of course he fucking did. It's that episode of Family Guy, isn't it, where Peter befriends him and they spend the whole episode and Peter's like, oh, he didn't do it. And at the end, he just starts stabbing random people. Oh, guess he did.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm of the opinion he did it as well. And he's dead now, so yeah. Anyway, I enjoyed that. Quite enjoyed looking up. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. We have Amelia Earhart coming up soon. Yes. Oh, I know, I told you, yeah, I'm writing Amelia Earhart at the moment.
You didn't tell me. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Did Rowan request someone to ask for that?
I don't know. We got a request this morning, which I thought was fucking amazing. It's if everyone's aware of it, the dingo ain't my baby. Like, we're gonna look at that at some point in the future as well, because I find that fascinating. Yeah. But yeah,
someone
no.
definitely asked for Amelia Earhart. I don't know if that was you. That's coming, apparently. That's cool. I'm glad you're doing that, actually, because I was tempted to do that one as well. So I'm glad we're on the same page.
Yeah, and I think her plane was discovered fairly recently as well.
Recently. Well, allegedly.
Allegedly, yes. So yeah, look forward to Amelia Earhart coming up soon. Yeah, thanks very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Let us know what your thoughts were. Make sure you rate, review us on Spotify. Give us 5 stars. That really helps us out. And yeah, we love you lots. We'll see you on the next one.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.